a pop, yourself a beer, or a cold libation. I can tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from Brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxings, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on, contests and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast. With the other Jason.
What I miss about home is the rain and the greenness and the pint of harp and the evening before us and friends coming in and the pint of harp and Sally O'Brien and the way she might look at you and joining the chorus and the pint of harp. All the money is good and the suntan is free. You could fry an egg on the stones here, if you had an egg. And you could certainly sink a pint of harp, if you had a pint of harp.
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. I am recording this on the 17th of March here in the U.S., St. Patrick's Day. So I will pepper in advertisements from Irish TV throughout this episode. You just heard one for harp. And I will have some others for different things, like I say, throughout the episode. But all I'm doing today is answering some phone calls. I'll pepper a couple things in. I've got some podcast recommendations. But really, we're going to answer phone calls and play some Irish ads. Today, I'm not doing anything super special with the family for St. Patrick's Day. We're cooking up some coddle. I think that's how you pronounce that. It's potatoes, onions, sausage, bacon. Of course, I'll have a shot Irish whiskey. I've got to work tomorrow, so I'm not going to fall down drunk. You know, being an old man makes that hard these days. But I'll probably watch one of the modern classic Irish films, like 2012's Grabbers. But yeah, that's St. Patrick's Day for me. As far as recommendations, what do I have for you? Well, I've got a couple things here that I think are worth checking out. The first one I want to mention is a recent episode of The GMologist Presents. Carl over there is talking about starter sets. And Carl talked about a number of starter sets. This is episode 251 of The GMologist Presents. And he discussed The Legend of Five Rings, Force and Destiny, Wrath and Glory. He also touches on like Pendragon. So there are a number of starter sets that he kind of mentions, and he talks about the utility of starter sets. Personally, although I love box sets, I'm not a big fan of starter sets. I'd rather have the full rules. If I played more in person, there is advantages of starter sets, like the old Pathfinder one from the early 2000s. It had like a map and stand-ups and things like that. I do see utility in something like that, but overall, personally, I'm not a huge fan of starter sets because then you end up having to buy the full rules anyway. But Carl has an interesting episode on that, so I do recommend you check that out. The other thing I'm going to mention here as far as shout-outs goes, Bill Hoyt, one of the early D&D players who you can meet at DaveCon. If you go check out DaveCon, note there's a link for DaveCon in the show notes. Bill Hoyt's put out his early D&D notes for an early campaign that he ran. Bill Hoyt was one of the old original Blackmoor players and played with Gary and all that kind of thing. So check that out. There's a link in the show notes. It's free. Doesn't cost you a thing to check it out. There's also been published, although we don't know the original author, a campaign set. Well, it's not a campaign set. It's really more just a dungeon from the 70s called Lonely Mountain. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. That is also free. So definitely check that out. And then we have an interesting blog entry I want to point you towards that's talking about some player advice for OSR games, although this would work for any kind of games. And it's interesting because not only is this a talk advice for the players and the game master, there's also advice in here for being a patron. Some of these games, especially within the OSR world, there are people that are doing games where people that can't be at each session are playing patrons in the setting. So there's a link to that in the show notes. Go check that out. It's from the Tales of the Border Baronies blog, and it's interesting because there's some pretty good advice for players of for different levels depending what kind of player you are. And that's not something we see a whole lot. So, and with that, let's open up the mailbag and get into the calls.
Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Well, maybe it's your auntie or jerked by your spouse, but the operator screaming is coming from inside the house.
Hey, Brendan, would you like to try a brand new traditional drink? Do you expect consistent quality? Do you go for a distinctive flavor? Are you man enough to change? Would your friends call you a sound man?
I wear a smile for all to see when Beamish is in front of me. A better drink in every way. Ask for a Beamish now today.
Sound man, Brendan.
Hey, Jason, Daniel calling in because I feel like I haven't called in a lot. You've done a lot of like reviews and movies and stuff that I'm catching up on because they're longer and I haven't seen the movies and I like to watch them first. And I just saw that 2D21 pop up, which I'm going to be very interested in. I've only run that game once. Pretty interesting. But I wanted to say that I caught up on your blog. I really like this, what's it, UGR or something, whatever, that you ran a couple of fights in. It seems like a pretty neat little system and I went on and downloaded it. I can totally, without giving spoilers to the blog, you know, I totally see why you're making some changes and kind of doing the as much of the adventure as possible and finishing it before you blog about it. I think there is a certain level of we want to play solo because we enjoy playing solo. We want to do it as a relaxing thing. And then all of a sudden it becomes like a commitment because we started doing something about it, right? So I could totally see that and I get that. So that's pretty cool. I can't wait till you kind of give the summary of that if you ever do. But this other game seems really neat. And I think the more spontaneous, just kind of fun little quick random stuff can be a great thing for the blog as well as just playing solo, whether you blog about it or not. I think that you gave me some good insight there. I didn't realize that the novelizations are often based on the original screenplay so you can get different stuff from it than what's in the movie. So that's pretty exciting. I just didn't know that. I kind of always avoided them because I was like, oh, I've seen that movie. But now I'm going to go search some out. So that's pretty awesome. Anyways, just thought I'd call in, let you know I'm still listening and really enjoying the show. Talk to you soon.
Daniel, thank you so much for that call. Of course, Daniel has the Bandits Keep Media Empire. Go check out his podcasts, YouTube videos. He also does a podcast, The Care King of D&D Homebrew, called Monsters and Treasures. Check that out as well. Yeah, 2D20, hopefully you listen to that episode. We have some calls about that episode on this episode today. As far as the blog goes, yeah, you know, it started feeling like work, and I don't want it to be work, but I am enjoying doing it. USR, Unbelievably Simple Role-Playing by Scott Malthouse is a great little system. I'll put a link in the show notes people can follow, but I'm really enjoying it. And in fact, this coming Friday, I have another blog post coming out with a short USR adventure based on a classic movie from 1973. Here, I'll play a clip of music and we'll see if you can put it together. If not, then you'll have to just tune in the blog on Friday to check it out. The last thing I'll mention are the movie novelizations. And I can't speak so much for newer ones. Newer movie novelizations may not have access to the earlier shooting scripts like the older ones did, but especially movies from like the 80s and 70s, they were often adapted from these early scripts, so there are things in the novels that aren't in the movies. The Rambo series is a great example of that. Of course, the original movie Rambo is adapted from a novel, First Blood, so that there's not really a movie novelization for that. And the novel and the movie are quite a bit different in tone. But when we move to Rambo 2, the author of the novel, David Morrell, actually wrote the novelization for Rambo 2, and it not only is kind of his take on that script, but it also includes elements from the earlier script by James Cameron. So it's quite a bit different from the actual movie, which is really cool. So yeah, it definitely worth checking out. And the same thing with like Indiana Jones. We have some interesting things in there that aren't in the movies. So I do recommend checking out some of these earlier novelizations. Like Jaws has some interesting things in there. Like Jaws 3 has some really cool differences. Probably your best bet, though, is to do some research before you put out money, because some of these novelizations are kind of expensive, so it's worth researching to see what other people say about the novel before you pick it up, because some of them are just what's on the screen. But a lot of them do have all kinds of neat nuggets and Easter eggs in there that enhance that movie experience or give you a totally different experience. Daniel, thank you for that call, and we're going to move on to the next caller.
Planet on tour.
This song is about a famous pint. It's called Into the Dark. We hope you like it.
Planet on Guinness.
You never know how good a pint can be until you've had a pint of Guinness.
There's only one worthy of the name, Guinness.
Beautiful.
I think they like it.
Guinness, no beer comes near.
Of course, I have comments about 2D20 Modiphius. So my provenance, I played a lot of Modiphius 2D20 games, Mutant Chronicles, Conan, Infinity. I have John Carter of Mars, but never played it. Star Trek, Octoon Cthulhu, which I think is my go-to and favorite right now. Fallout, Cohors Cthulhu. We were involved in the playtest for Dune, me and my group. Some of my group, different people, were involved in the playtest for Dune that Jason mentioned, and for Cohors Cthulhu, so we have, like, playtesting credit. Yay. So I'm working on some manuscripts for Octoon Cthulhu Adventures, and I've run several at conventions, and I really do enjoy the system. First comment about my Dune experience. It's a very different and unique game, and I'm glad they tweaked some of the powers. Assuredly, Mentats and Bene Gesserit are still pretty damn powerful, but I feel like they've toned down the I win button. Although if you're a gamist in that game, you can probably figure out how to save your Bene's meta currency momentum and use it to good effect in that game. So I guess I'd mentioned that I'd left a lot of Doom or Threat on the table, but I feel like I really used a bunch too. But the player characters had a great solution to what they were doing. They were able to lower certain threats by some preparation, have plenty of allies to combat stuff that was going on the periphery, found out information about what was going on, and beat my roles when they needed to, or countered my meta currency when they were able to. So I thought that was pretty cool. I had fun overall. I hope everyone else did in that game, and I'm looking forward to it, to running it. I mean, I have the starter set, and it is cool. A lot of the things that Gabe said that he pimped or really supported Modiphius 2D20 games, I definitely agree with. One thing I think is cool that you guys didn't mention, I guess second point, I hope it's not like a 15-minute ramble, but the second point is I feel like 2D20, at least Octoon Cthulhu and Fallout to some degree, probably Star Trek, are very easy, like, pickup games. There are tools to generate random encounters, and I can play it with, like, either dual or with two people. So if one of our games doesn't make, actually, Octoon is our fallback game, and I just took the GM screen and rolled an adventure randomly. And the game, I think, works so well. Those type of tools are so well done that the players thought we were running a published adventure. So nothing that I did, but I just went through the prompts, and it was pretty cool. So yeah, maybe I'll have to write that one up too. So anyway, I think my other point, Star Trek. I did really enjoy Star Trek, and I'm excited that they're going to implement some stuff from the Solo rules for Star Trek in the second edition. I definitely would like to get that to the table more, and I agree, you know, that it is a nice game where combat really doesn't have to be the focus. And Dune, I do like that you could build your own house, have your own game. They do have it such that you can be the, not Atreides, but make your own house or play the pregens of a new house and play on Arrakis. Like, you get the Imperial contract, which makes things very different. So it's your own story, right? The Harkonnens don't have to win. But I guess that would mean you have foreknowledge as a Bene Gesserit of what's going on, right? So yeah, I think that's pretty neat. You could play anywhere in the verse. For me, I think I need to read... I've read the first three books, but need to read the last... Oh, first four. I need to read the last two. And I, you know, I guess I did read and enjoy House of Atreides. It's different. It's not the classic Herbert style, and maybe it is a little... Well, I mean, I haven't written a novel, so I'm not going to comment on it, but I did enjoy the book. Perhaps, Jason, you haven't enjoyed it as much. And what else? We'll say their starter sets are top-notch. If you just want to jump into the game, the Star Trek Fallout one are very, very good production value and value for the price. And you get dice. You always get fun dice with them, too. So I think that's kind of neat. I have the Dune starter set too that I keep bringing to my home group, and they're like, come on guys, come on, you know you want to. Especially they'll get into making their house, you know, so, and I played around with that tool to make a house too, which I think is pretty fun. So yeah, good stuff, great interview. Gabe, I'm maybe we played on BS and Gaming or at a BS or Con, I'm not sure. Your voice sounds familiar, but as the older I get, the worse I get at recognizing names to faces. So great interview, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Carl, thank you so much for that call. Carl, of course, is the host of the Geomologist Presents podcast that I plugged earlier in the show. And I think the only thing I'm going to comment on here is we did fail to mention Fallout, the 2D20 version, but it does sound like it would be an easy version to pick up. If you're curious to hear an actual play for Fallout, there's a really good one by the Real Play Games podcast, and it starts on 7 April 2023, or at least that's the date that they published the first part of that. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes so you guys can check that out. Real Play Games are one of the few actual play podcasts I listen to, along with James Srall's Subclass Act, so I do recommend it. Now, as far as other comments Carl made, I think they kind of stand alone. We're going to have some more calls about 2D20. We are talking about doing a follow-up episode for 2D20 and maybe doing a panel discussion about 2D20 games. So I'm not going to go real deep into answering any questions about 2D20 because hopefully we'll explore the topic further with a couple people discussing it. But that said, let's get on to the next call.
Who tells the sun to rise? Now Pat is on his way.
It's Pat the Baker.
First with freshness.
Pat the Baker.
So fresh it's famous.
Bright and early every morning. Pat the Baker.
Pat the Baker.
So fresh it's famous.
Hey Jason, I just listened to your interview with Gabe about analytic dice and the 2D20 system. I enjoyed that discussion. It seems very interesting, you know, talking about the writer's room. And look, I've been playing this GM-less Mouse Ritter game with my girls where we're all making the story together as we play. So, it's like we're doing the writer's room with a game that isn't meant to be that necessarily. But I mean, I guess that's what you're doing when you're playing solo. You're using those dice, fate dice in my case, as a means of determining what's going on. And so instead of the you know, meta currencies, I'm relying on those dice rolls to set up, you know, the how big and bad these villains are, and what this location is, or are the circumstances good or bad for us. It's not necessarily the meta currency. That would be hard because we're all players in the same sense. But the, you know, playing solo, your fate dice or whatever, you know, oracle you're using kind of becomes that meta currency in a way. So you guys discussing this makes me more interested in checking out like a 2D20 system. And maybe even, you know, you're saying like the Star Trek is hard to play, but I am kind of curious about the nonviolence and making that fun and engaging. You know, I want that as an option for my girls. You know, I don't want to necessarily poo-poo the traditional gaming and everything, but you know, solving problems in a non-combat confrontational way, I think is a better life skill overall. So yeah, I'm curious about that. So thanks for the episode. Thanks to Gabe, and talk to you later. Take care.
Merc, thank you for that call. You know, I mentioned the 2D20 panel discussion, but really the idea of having nonviolent games is a topic worthy of its own podcast and its own panel discussion. You have to have some kind of conflict, some kind of excitement in games, but it doesn't have to be violent conflict. And I think there are really good ways to do that and have an exciting, enjoyable game that doesn't include punching or shooting somebody, right? So I think that is a good discussion topic and maybe something to look for in the future. As far as Merc goes, Merc has the Merc the Meek podcast. Merc has a number of podcasts, actually, including one where it's a watch-along for the Delicious in Dungeon anime. So check out all Merc's stuff. Very, very good. Highly recommended. Okay, that said, let's go on to the next call.
The unmistakable sound.
The chieftain!
The unmistakable taste.
What do I think of Guinness? Put a pint in front of me and I'll show you.
Rich and dark. Deep and rewarding. Guinness.
You just can't beat it.
Guinness. No beer comes near.
Hey, Jason. This is Kevin from Analytic Dice. And I just want to call in and say I've listened to you and Gabe talk about the 2D20 systems. And some of your conversation went to talking about the breaking of immersion or the lack of immersion because of having to deal with mechanics in 2D20 systems. And I have to say, I totally disagree with that. You know, I've played a bunch of Conan. I even played in Gabe's ill-fated, joking Gabe, a Star Trek 2D20 system. And, you know, had a great time in those. And in the Conan 2D20 system that we played for a while, I didn't feel that I needed to break my immersion to deal with the roles that I need to make, or to use momentum, or to quickly decide how much momentum, how much are we going to leave for us. You know, it becomes secondhand. And in fact, I would say it helps your player, your character, sorry, your character, to have agency within the game. You are not just a passive, oh, this happens to me, but something's going on and I can influence the outcome, whether it's based on the amazing many skills that Gabe points out, my famous rope trick and other things in Conan. You know, you can use the skills combined with momentum spend to really influence what's happening around you. And that's what I really like about it. You know, great system. And I know you guys all mentioned against Dark Master, so I'll say that, again, the having to stop to look at tables or to use tries in that game, it doesn't break my immersion. I mean, I guess it depends. You know, are you saying that immersion is 100%? You're in character the whole time, and again, I'd say in any game that rolls dice, you, can't have that. But what you can have is mechanics that with practice and use of the system become second nature to you. You frankly don't even think about them as you're doing them. So anyway, that's my comment about that. I think what I'm saying, I think in your conversation, you guys maybe made an overly big thing about the impact on immersion of 2D20 systems. And I just don't think with folks who, you know, played a few sessions that that's really the case. But anyhow, look forward to hearing more.
Kevin, thank you for that call. Kevin is the host, along with Gabe, of the Analytic Dice Podcast. Kevin has also been on here before talking about his game, Burn 2D20. Check that out as well. I think it's the immersion discussion's bigger than 2D20. I think it expands beyond that. And I think it really comes down to the players. Both Che over at Roleplay Rescue and Anthony, also known as Ringslinger, over at Casting Shadows, have talked quite a bit about immersion and different people's engagement levels with that. So I would recommend you check those out for information on that and a further discussion on that. Although it's definitely something we can open up, and when we do the 2D20 panel, we can discuss that, the switching of roles and that kind of thing. I will say it's interesting that, you know, the idea of metacurrency or the idea of these mechanics giving more player agency. So yesterday, as I record this, I played in a session of Wrath of the Righteous run by Joe Richter from the Hindsightless podcast. We're playing, you know, this long-term Pathfinder 1 campaign using Wrath of the Righteous. And we're, you know, well over a year into this game. And we're at the point now where the characters at the time of the session were 12th level and like 3rd or 4th mythic tier, something like that, or 2nd mythic tier, I don't know. But once you add in the mythic tiers in there, you get mythic points, which let you do things like roll a die to add it to the roll you've already done. So say you're doing a skill check or some kind of attack and you don't quite make it, you spend a mythic point to roll to add to that. So hopefully at that point, then you're going to hit that target number. And it kind of adds that in there to give you that more player agency to do cool stuff. And we're currently in, I don't know, one of the realms of hell or something, and we're at this arena match, and we're fighting this champion, this big demon who's got bat wings and forearms and all this kind of thing, and we took him out in just two rounds. we got very lucky because he immediately attacked the healer in the group, and the paladin was able to block some of that damage and allow, otherwise the healer would have been killed immediately. But the paladin was able to keep the healer from being killed. The bard went, and the bard was able to stun this demon. And then my character is a dwarf monk. There are these big platforms in the arena, and he was able to run up and dive off one of these platforms and, you know, do the atomic elbow into this guy. And he was stunned, so he didn't get to take his next turn. The next round, the paladin did a ton of damage to him. And then my monk was able to finish him off at the end of that round. So we took him out in just two turns. Well, I mean, we did like 300 some points of damage to this demon. But yeah, the metacurrency definitely turns it from a more traditional kind of game into something else. And I think that is an interesting point. I mean, that's one of the reasons that Barbarians of Lemuria is my favorite sword and sorcery game, because it lets you do those kind of cool things that normally couldn't do. But it also comes down to the die rolls. And now Pathfinder, some of the abilities do let you do rerolls, which I kind of dislike. I like the idea of padding your rolls or giving you a better chance to succeed. I don't necessarily like being able to modify rolls after you roll them. But that goes back to the premature imagination discussion, where if you're in a game that lets you roll again or add to your roll, then the key to that is you can't even think about describing the result or imagining the result of a roll until everything is done, you know. And that's something Gabe and I kind of discussed during the 2D20 conversation. But yeah, as far as immersion goes, you're not wrong, Kevin. And I think it really, though, depends on each player and each person, how easily they can switch between modes. And like I say, that's kind of the topic over at Roleplay Rescue and Anthony's Casting Shadows, in that some people don't ever want to leave that player realm, and to the point where Che is exploring the idea of the players don't roll dice and the players don't even have character sheets, and the GM controls all that, and that way the player isn't distracted by rolling dice at all, and they can, you know, just never think about game mechanics at all. So there are different ways to crack that egg, and I definitely think it's an interesting discussion. Thank you for calling that in, Kevin, and definitely check out Analytic Dice.
And remember, folks, if you sent a call into Jason and you haven't heard it on this episode, have no fear. It will appear.
Okay, folks, that's it. Thank you so much for all the calls. I appreciate all my callers. I appreciate everybody out there listening. And I will talk to you again later this week. Until then, as always, I want to thank TJ Drennan for the music and Ray Otis for the coffee cup clip art, as well as Colin over at Spike Pit for that reminder that if you haven't heard a call, and I do have a number of calls still pending, then you will hear them in a future episode. Wednesday's episode will feature a number of calls about the idea of in-game rewards for out-of-game actions. So watch for that. Until then, be excellent to each other.
Your auntie or a joker by your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I could shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. Butcher is a dustman and your moil is by the zipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away, don't look away, don't look away, don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.